Cooper Wilcox has set his coffee aside on the bench so he can take off his big hat, his Stetson. He begins turning it over and over in his hands, an old habit of his. Kitty corner from where they sit, Dickie Duck Elliott pulls up to the gas pump and begins filling D-12, something they will not be able to do much longer. He spots them on the bench and waves. They give him a little of the old right back at you, but the man with the hat, the gray trooper Stetson, that will finish its tour of duty in the weeds with the soda cans and fast food wrappers, keeps his gaze mostly on the new sarge. His eyes are asking if they can rule that out, if they can rule anything out. The sarge, irritated by this, says, "Why don't we just finish it off, then? Finish it off and have done. Tow it into the backfield, pour gasoline into her until it runs out the windows, then just light her up." Curtis looks at him with an evenness that can't quite hide his shock. "That might be the most dangerous thing we could do with it," he says. "It might even be what it wants us to do, what it was sent to provoke. How many kids have lost fingers because they found something in the weeds they didn't know was a blasting cap and pounded it with a rock? This isn't the same. How do you know it's not? How do you know?" And the new sarge, who will later think, "It should have been me whose hat wound up lying blood-bolted on the side of the road," can say nothing. It seems almost profane to disagree with him, and besides, who knows? He could be right. Kids do blow off their fingers with blasting caps, or kill their little brothers with guns they found in their parents' bureau drawers, or burn down the house with some old spark light they found out in the garage, because they don't know what they're playing with. "Suppose," says the man, twirling his Stetson between his hands, "that the 8 is a kind of valve, like the one in a scuba diver's regulator. Sometimes it breathes in, and sometimes it breathes out, giving or receiving according to the will of the user. But what it does is always limited by the valve." "Yes, but..." "Or think of it another way. Suppose it breathes like a man lying on the bottom of a swamp and using a hollow reed to sip air with so he won't be seen." "All right, but either way, everything comes in or goes out in small breaths. They must be small breaths because the channel through which they pass is small. Maybe the thing using the valve or the reed has put itself into a kind of suspended state, like sleep or hypnosis, so it can survive on so little breath. And then, suppose some misguided fool comes along and throws enough dynamite into the swamp to drain it and make the reed unnecessary. Or, if you're thinking in terms of a valve, blows it clean off. Would you want to risk that? Risk giving it all the goddamn air it needs?" "No," the new sarge says in a small voice. Curtis says, "Once Buck Flanders and Andy Colucci made up their minds to do that very thing." "The hell you say." "The hell I don't," Curtis returns evenly. "Andy said if a couple of state troopers couldn't get away with a little vehicular arson, they ought to turn in their badges. They even had a plan. They were going to blame it on the paint and the thinner out there in the hutch. Spontaneous combustion. Poof, all gone. And besides," Buck said, "who'd send for the fire marshal in the first place? Just an old shed with some old beater of a Buick inside it, for Christ's sake." The new sarge can say nothing. He's too amazed. "I think it may have been talking to them," Kurt says. "Talking." He's trying to get the sense of this. "Talking to them." "Yes,"